buddy. And so tonight, I want to share a little bit. The topic that I want to share is, I'm just deciding right now, okay? How to bring spirituality into our daily life. And before I present my, talk, I want to share one mantra with you. And I think many of you know the mantra. And the mantra is Om Mani Padme Hum. And that is, I always say that that's the Tibetan national mantra. Each and every Tibetan, we always recite this mantra. And the mantra has a meaning that it is, we say that it is the Compassion Buddha mantra. And most of the Tibetan people, we bring spirituality through this mantra in our daily life. So that is why I want to share that with you. And the mantra is really short. And you can memorize this and you can recite this, you know, in your everyday life. And maybe I will give a little bit explanation of what does each word in the mantra means. The mantra starting with Om. Om is like a universal sound, and Om has a, the sound Om has a three different sound. When you hear Om, it has a sound of A, it has a sound of U, it has a sound of Ma. You know, A, U, Ma. When we say Om, so these three letters signifies body, speech, and mind. So the body, speech, and mind of all the Buddha, and body, speech, and mind of ourself. And then mani means a jewel. Jewel signifies love and compassion. And that is why I think many of you have seen the Compassion Buddha in the Tibetan tradition. That the Compassion Buddha, there are many different forms of Compassion Buddha. One is with the four hands, folding two hands like this, and two hands holding lotus and beads or mala. And within his folding hands, he holds a jewel. And that jewel signifies love and compassion. And why it signifies love and compassion is also because jewel is the most precious one among the, ornament. And the same thing, love and compassion is the most precious one among our emotions. And then, Pema. Pema means lotus. Lotus signifies wisdom. And why it signifies wisdom is because lotus came out of the mud, but it is not polluted with the mud. The same thing, wisdom came out of the, our ordinary mind, but it is not polluted with the, our ordinary thoughts. So that's kind of like a Lotus signifies the wisdom. And then at the end, hum. Hum means union. Love and compassion, union with the wisdom. And that is really important in our daily life also, to have an open heart. At the same time, we need to have an open mind. If we just keep our open heart and closing our mind, then it will cause some kind of different result. So if we are opening our heart, at the same time, we have to open our mind also. Then it will be beautiful. So, and that is why also many of you have seen the Compassion Buddha with 1,000 hands and 1,000 eyes. I think this is not Compassion Buddha. This is a different one. But the Compassion Buddha has 1,000 hands and 1,000 eyes, and each hand has an eye. Means all the hands signifies the compassion. And compassion means taking care. You know, when we take care of somebody else, that means we take care with the hands physically. So that is why hand signifies the compassion and the eyes signifies the wisdom. You, to practice love and compassion, we need a wisdom eye. That is the significance from the Compassion Buddha form. So that is why, you know, I think we Tibetan think that Compassion Buddha is our special deity. And we all think that we have got a gene of the Compassion Buddha. So, and I think that it is, sometimes it is helping to develop love and compassion if we recite that mantra. Because just in general, if we recite that mantra, it will remind us of the love and compassion. Love and compassion associated with the wisdom. You know, so that is why we always recite the mantra. So everybody wanted to recite this mantra with me? Okay. So first repeat this mantra with me 3 times, and then you will know that what this mantra is. Then we will sing this mantra for 5 minutes, and then I will begin my talk on how to bring spirituality into our daily lives. Okay? And sometimes people scare if you are reciting the mantra. This mantra, you don't have to scare anything. It doesn't mean any other superstitious meaning, okay? It is just a, you know, the meaning that what I have said, that does mean. And, you know, it doesn't have any kind of, involved with some faith or belief or something like that. It is just, it make a common sense meaning from this mantra to develop love and compassion, which is associated with the wisdom. So the mantra is, so you all repeat with me, okay? Om Mani Peme Hum. Om Mani Peme Hum. Om Mani Peme Hum. Okay, now we are going to recite that in one. Om Mani Peme Hum. Okay? Say, Om Mani Peme Hum. Om Mani Peme Hum. Om Mani Peme Hum. Okay. So we all recite this mantra for 5 minutes, you know, in the melody. So the melody is really simple. The melody goes like Om Mani Peme Hum, like the first one just going up. And it's like taking the love and compassion associated with the wisdom in our intellectual mind, okay? And then the second one is coming straight. Om Mani Padme Hum. And it's like, you know, going into our head and becoming an intelligence. And then slowly taking it down. Om Mani Padme Hum. The sound goes a little down. And the fourth one, just completely going down. Om Mani Padme Hum. Just going deep down into our heart. Okay? So that is the melody of the mantra. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme not going to recite this mantra whole night, okay? So this is just a sample that I am giving you so that you can take it in your daily life. And if you feel like you want to recite this mantra when you are doing meditation or when you're starting meditation or when you are ending your meditation, and that is kind of good, that if you are doing that mantra before meditation, then at the same time when you are reciting this mantra, pray in your mind from your heart that may all sentient beings be happy and may all sentient beings be free from suffering. And then if you are doing that at the end, then you just dedicate, like, may these virtues that I collected from meditation bring more happiness into this world and more happiness into the other sentient beings, and including oneself. Okay, so that is, you know, usually we Tibetan people recite this mantra every day. And the main topic here tonight that I want to share is how to bring spirituality into our daily life. First, we have to understand what is spirituality. And we all have a different interpretation. And if I define a little bit from the word, that the word we are using, spirituality, spiritual. As a spiritual, the word, it comes from the word spirit. And it does mean something kind of like a development of our own spirit, or connecting ourselves with our own spirit. And the word spirit, where does it come from? You know, usually the English word mainly comes from the Latin. And the Latin word for spirit is spiritus, I think. And spirit plus tus, it means to breathe, to be alive. So that is the meaning. It means something kind of like a, as long as our body is with our spirit, and we are alive. And it is something like when the spirit goes out of our physical body, then we are dead. And once our spirit gone out of this physical body, and there will be no more breathing, we are not alive. So that is why the word spirit, the spiritual, is, I think, that is the development of our own spirit, or I can say inner being. So sometimes it is difficult to say the word spirit and soul in the Buddhism, because in the Buddhism we don't believe in Atma. And why we don't believe in Atma? And if the Atma is completely similar, is completely same as the Atma, then Buddhists don't believe in soul. When Buddha negated about the Atma, that Buddha says that there is no Atma, what does that mean? He means the soul which has a three quality. The three qualities are pure, perfect, and permanent. And he says that the soul, or the being, or the real self, which has these three qualities, is not exist. And Atma has a meaning of that one. If you are thinking soul as a pure, perfect, and permanent, three P, triple P, okay? Then it is like Buddhism don't believe in that kind of soul. But if you are interpreting the soul as a real self, then I think we do believe in soul. If like we have a real self, we have an inner being. And that is why I want to, you know, clarify it. Maybe many of you are thinking that, oh, in the Buddhism, people saying that Buddhists don't believe in soul. Now, here, Rinpoche talking about the soul and the spirit and this thing. So, you know, in the Buddhism, we don't believe the soul, which has these three qualities. So, to bring spirituality means to develop our inner being by connecting ourselves with our own spirit. And that is why every time in the meditation, that we always start our meditation with our breathing meditation. And breathing is very important. Like, for example, the word spirit has a meaning to breathe and to be alive. And it is something kind of like, I'm saying that because there, maybe here many of you are beginner. The breathing is the bridge between our body and spirit. And the spiritual journey that we all are looking for is spiritual journey is not an outside journey. It is not an going to the, you know, Himalayas or going to the caves or going to the moon or going to the Mars. It is not something like that. Spiritual journey is going inward, going from external world to our internal world. And from going from external world to internal world, we have to go through that bridge, which is our breath, you know, which is our breathing. So that is why meditation always starting with a breathing meditation. And usually spirituality, spiritual practice should always be against our negative ego. And many times if we don't be careful, then spiritual practice become a decoration to our negative egos. I'm not completely against kind of like renunciation. You know, I do believe in renunciation. I always interpret renunciation not as a renouncing from the world. It is not from the renouncing from the wealth. It is not from renouncing from our health. It is not renouncing from our friends. Renunciation that Buddhism we are talking about is renouncing from the negative thoughts toward them, toward those things. Renouncing from the negative thoughts. And that is why many times we misinterpret, for example, to do a spiritual practice means, oh, I have to renounce everything from the world and then facing toward the some kind of like going to the Himalayas and to the caves and something like that. And then once you reach there, still if we don't understand what is the real spirituality, then we start decorating or developing our negative ego. People live in the mountain or in the cave and thinking about what people are talking about me. If it becomes like that, then I think it is completely going into a complete wrong direction. So spirituality always should be against our negative ego. If it is developing our negative ego, then it is not a spiritual. And our mind is really strange. The ordinary mind that we have is very strange, that it always searches from the outside thing. It has been, in, you know, if we look at all our history, ancestors, most of the people have been searching spirituality through the outside material. And that is why many people from the West going to the Mount Everest to climb it. I think Mount Everest has been in the East since this earth was there. And people never try to climb there from the East. The people who want to climb, who got this idea, is when the Western influence came to the East. And at the same thing that we all are trying to find happiness or develop our spirituality from the outside world, outside material thing, building the temple and, you know, like worshiping. Just if we focus our mind only toward the outside material thing, I think that is not a spiritual. Spirituality is the inner journey. Like when we face inward and then go into ourselves and then connecting ourselves with our own spirit, then the spirituality starts. you know, the spiritual things start. And that is the first step to develop our spiritual practice. And that is, I think, we should keep in our mind always that spirituality is the inner journey. It is not the outer journey. But we have to be very careful that our ordinary mind is always kind of like cheating us. And the ordinary mind, which is mixed up with our negative ego, always looking at the things which has a problem and the trouble. And we never look at the whole thing. It is interesting that I was reading one book. It says that some psychologist did an experiment on how people's mind perceiving the things. And they says that the room was full of people. And then the person who was doing that, he put the one big paper on the wall and he wrote one dot there. And then he asked each and everybody, what do you see there? And each and everybody trying to figure out what that dot is. And then he asked each and everybody, some people don't see good and they can just go nearby it, and some people wearing their glasses and, you know, trying to figure out what that dot is. And he was really amazed that nobody in that room says that I see a big piece of paper there. You know, he didn't ask, what do you see on that paper? He says, what do you see there? And everybody trying to figure out what that dot is. And, you know, nobody says that I see a big piece of paper there. So that is kind of like how our ordinary mind perceiving the things. And it become kind of like a habit. It become kind of like a habit that when we look at the things, even when we are our mind looking at the spirituality, we are not looking at the spirituality as a whole. We are looking something kind of like figuring out what that dot is. You know, so that is why to perceive the spirituality, it is important to look at the spirituality as a whole. And looking at as the whole is completely different than looking at one single thing. And that is why also that in the Taoism, we have a yin and yang. You know, if you look at the only black part of the yin and yang, then you will not see the white part. And then you are not seeing the yin and yang, whole yin and yang. To see the whole yin and yang, you have to see both white and black, both. So, you know, to see the real spirituality or spiritual, what we have to do is we have to look at the thing as a whole. And that is, you know, I want to tell you that, you know, first how to develop spirituality, we have to know how to look at the spirituality, how to perceive the spirituality, how to perceive spiritual things. And in the past, we misinterpret the spirituality. And actually, from my personal point, I think that Tibetan Buddhists, we believe that the religion and the spiritual are kind of like the same. Like we have one name, and in the Sanskrit we call Dharma, and the Tibetan word we call Chö. And the practice related to the Chö, we call that a spiritual, and that is a religious also. But here, I think many people don't like religion, if I say to practice a religion, because religion has gone into a different direction. And that is why it is difficult. So that is why I'm using the word spirituality. And if we are not careful, then spirituality will also go into the same direction, I think. Like spirituality, I always say that spirituality should not be the cause to make ourselves feel fear and guilt. That is like these days many people using it. Many people use like spirituality, giving a spiritual teaching, and then they try to make people feel fear. And making feel fear, some kind of like talking many things about the, what's it, bad rebirth in your next life. And then, you know, people talk a lot of things about not to do this and not to do that or something like that. And why I say that is because sometimes our ordinary, this ego-oriented mind is kind of like a childish. If it says don't, then it wants to do that. I think we all have an experience that if there is a child, you know, if you say, you leave something there which is a breakable, and you say, don't touch that. And when you are gone out of that room, the child wanted to touch it. And if you give some kind of eatable thing, you say, okay, you are a good boy or a good girl, you eat this and it will be good for you. And then child doesn't want to eat. Child's minds go to the different, saying that, you know, whichever tell you not to do that, they want to do that. And sometimes our ordinary mind is like that. That if you say many things, don't do that, then we want to do that. There was a story at the time of Milarepa. I think many of you have known the Milarepa, right? Milarepa was the great meditator, ascetic in Tibet. That we say that he became enlightenment in one lifetime, in his life. And where Milarepa was doing meditation on the footpath of that mountain, there lives one family. And there was one man with his wife and children, and the man never worked, and he was being always lazy. And many people coming all over the Tibet to, like, they heard a lot of things about Milarepa, and they're coming to see him. And then he thought that, you know, I heard a lot of good things about Milarepa. Maybe Milarepa has some kind of method or mantra that will help him to become enlightenment in one night. And he has that kind of expectation. And then he thought that, okay, you know, he definitely has, and he is a compassionate master, and he will give me that mantra. And then one day he decided to go up mountain and to see Milarepa. And then he went into the cave of the Milarepa, and he bowed down, and he said that, Milarepa, could you please give me the mantra or the meditation technique that can make me enlightenment in one night? And Milarepa said, I couldn't give. I don't have any kind of technique that you can become enlightenment being in one night. And the man was insisting and insisting. And then Milarepa said, okay, so I will give you a mantra and meditation technique. And you go and you do that. And Milarepa give some kind of meditation, emptiness meditation technique. And then man was very happy, and he said, okay, I will do that practice tonight. And then he was leaving the cave of the Milarepa, and then before leaving the cave, and then Milarepa called that person, by the way, don't think about the monkey when you are reciting that mantra. And then the man was like, what is Milarepa saying? You know, I never thought about monkey in my whole life. And, you know, I can do that. I can, you know, do that, you know. And then he was going down the mountain, and then he was thinking a lot about why Milarepa said that I should not think monkey, and I will never think that. And then as he was going down, he was thinking about whole way, you know, on the, you know, on going back to his home, he has been thinking about monkey, and he was telling himself that no, I'm not going to think about monkey. And then his mind, you know, going toward the monkey. And then he went to his home, and then he started doing meditation and the mantra that Milarepa gave. And then he was doing meditation, and then the whole time he was telling himself not to think about the monkey, not to think about the monkey. And one monkey came, two monkey came, three monkey came in his mind, and his mind was full of monkey by the midnight. And he became so restless. He became so restless that he was waiting for the sun to come. And he couldn't wait, and he couldn't sleep. His mind is kind of, now his mind is full of monkey. And he ran up to the mountain where Milarepa lived. And he said, Milarepa, what kind of technique you have given to me? You know, I was reciting that mantra, and you told me not to think about the mantra, and now whole night I have been thinking about that. And then Milarepa said, so that is, I want to teach you how our ordinary mind is. If our ordinary mind, that you have to understand the nature of our ordinary mind first to become the enlightenment. So, you know, that is just, I remember that story. Like when, you know, dawn, kind of like, you know, if that is kind of like, it happened in the whole history that, you know, always saying kind of like, don't do this, don't do that. And then like telling that also by creating a fear within the people's mind. And then like creating guilt. And that is kind of like, I'm completely against that. That is really, we don't need fear. We already have enough fear, you know, and that is kind of like a very destructible in the spiritual practice. If the spiritual practice if the spirituality is causing us to make more fear and more guilt, then I will say that is not a spiritual practice. And the spiritual practice is the antidote to overcome the negative emotion, you know. So if it is creating the negative emotion, then we should double check that whatever we are doing the practice, is that a real spiritual practice or not? You know, so that is one thing to keep in our mind. But I'm not going to say don't. So, and the spiritual practice, the main goal that in the Buddhism, why we are practicing spirituality. The goal of the spirituality is to achieve the enlightenment, the Buddha, the state of the Buddha, Buddhahood. So I will give a little bit definition of what is enlightenment first. If I make it really simple, I say that it is an everlasting happiness state of mind. Enlightenment state is the everlasting happiness state of the mind. And how can we get there? Is when you become enlightenment, your heart is getting bigger and bigger. Your heart is getting bigger and bigger so that you can welcome each and every sentient being in your heart. Welcoming the sentient being in your heart. And that is why when you become a Buddha, your heart is as big as the universe, that all the sentient being in the whole universe is in your heart. I'm telling this because opening our heart is practicing of love and compassion in the Buddhism. And here in the West, many times we have a misinterpretation of love and compassion, especially love. People think that to be in love, to love somebody, means they have to give their heart to somebody else. And I think that is really destructible. If you give your heart to somebody else, that means we are giving our home to somebody else. Heart is not something to give. Heart is something to keep. Heart is like a home of our spirit. Heart is like a home of our real beings. And that is something like, if you have a home and house, if you give your house to somebody else, and you become guest, and the other person become an owner. And we all know, and we don't, it is, you know, we will never know when will be we kicked out of that house. So that is why my interpretation of love is not to give your heart. Manage your heart. Make your heart big and welcome that person in your heart. Welcome person, you can welcome your family, you can welcome your friends, you can welcome, you know, the neighbor, and you can welcome all the sentient being in your heart if your heart is big enough and open. And the word itself, opening the heart, it has a really profound meaning. Why I say that is because when you open your heart, then your heart is full of love. For example, like here, I'm opening my palm here. I open my palm here and my hand is full of light. And now my attachment comes and my grasping comes, my clinging mind comes and saying that you should keep this light in your hand. If you don't keep it, then you're gonna lose this light. And this light is beautiful in your hand. And then I listen to that and then I start closing my hand. When I close my hand, is there a light inside my hand? There is no light inside my hands. The same thing, when we open our heart, when we open our heart, that means, you know, our heart is full of love and full of light. And many times when we open our heart, we all have a good experience in our life one time or two times, that we feel really good when we open our heart to somebody else. And out of fear, out of grasping, out of attachment, what we do is we say that, okay, I got the love and, you know, I have a really good feeling and I want to keep this feeling. And out of attachment, we start closing our heart. And then there is no love inside. So that is why, you know, opening the heart has a good meaning. So in the Buddhism, developing love and compassion is like opening our heart. Opening our heart and making our heart as big as universe and welcome all the sentient being and be a good host. So welcoming, you know, welcome the person who you like. And the Bodhisattva practice is like the Bodhisattva and the Buddhas, their heart is so big. Their heart is so big that they take care of every sentient beings. You know, so that is why the enlightenment is like when we open our heart and making our heart as big as universe, that is the stage that when we reach the enlightenment. And at the same time, we open our mind also. Opening our mind means if I talk it from the scientific point of view, it will be easier for you to understand. From the scientific point of view, scientists these days saying that only 10% of our brain cell is functioning, it is working. Rest, 90% is not working, right? Most of the people. And sometimes we will have a good experience. Many people have a kind of like a misinterpretation that using some kind of outside material, like or intoxicating kind of, you know, what's a drinks and drugs kind of things, and then they think that taking this kind of thing will open their mind. And actually it does sometimes. It does sometimes, like it kills the brain cell that is working, and it will awake the brain cell that which is not working or which is not functioning. And people has a different kind of experience. And they interpret that as a spiritual practice, but I say that is not a spiritual experience. So, you know, like from the scientific point of view, it says that the brain cell is not working, like 90% of the brain cell is not working. So Buddha's mind, when you become a Buddha, it is almost like your brain cell, 100% of your brain cell is working, it is functioning. So that is just like the simple explanation, you know, simple explanation of what is enlightenment. And it is like when your mind is open, when your all brain cell functioning, and when your heart become as big as universe, and all the sentient being can live in your heart, and that is the state of enlightenment being. And then maybe you are thinking that, okay, when you become enlightenment, it is like a everlasting happiness. I said that it is an everlasting happiness. But most of us, we have a different way of thinking about the happiness. But from the Buddhist point of view, what is happiness? Happiness is not a pleasure. Happiness is not a joy. Happiness is not joy, happiness is not suffering. It is in the middle. Happiness is just an absence of the suffering. So when we talk about the nirvana state, and that is just the absence of the suffering, you know, absence of the suffering from your mind, and that time you reach the nirvana state. An enlightenment state is more like a not only, you know, absence of the mind, but at the same time your heart is also big as the universe. So that is Buddha, and you know, another is the nirvana. So happiness is kind of like interesting that we all are looking for the happiness. You know, each and every sentient being is looking for the happiness. And we are looking for the happiness by making ourselves more alive. And we all have experience that when we are alive, when we are more alive, I mean alive means when we are in the present moment, when we are living in the present moment, we all have an experience that we are happy. And that is why most of the people, you know, who are interested in something and, you know, like to do something or to go somewhere, like interest, the interest comes from because we feel more alive by doing that. For example, I was giving an example that many people going to the Disney World, right, and Disneyland to ride on the roller coaster. It is something like interesting that why people become interested, even though they feel fear. You know, many people feel fear, but at the same time they were interested to go there. And how does that work? It's because they feel more alive. because it is a risky, and your mind is living in your physical body in the present moment, and you feel kind of happiness. You feel happy, but at the same time you are not happy because you have a full of fear. But people choose, you know, okay, I will have a both. You know, I will have a fear, but I will have a, you know, happiness. So minus, I will choose that one, and then I will experience that happiness. So that is kind of like interesting that, you know, how to define the happiness. You know, how our mind is choosing the happiness by being more alive. And that is why, like spiritual practice, when the spiritual practice, like a meditation, if it is bringing more aliveness in within ourselves, you know, then our interest will grow. Our interest to practice meditation will grow. So that is why, you know, just kind of like many, many spiritual practice, that what we know is we think that by doing meditation or by practicing meditation. So many people, they start doing meditation, but then they lose the interest toward the meditation, and then they feel obligation to do meditation. But, you know, if you have this kind of thing, then just kind of feel more alive, and then you will be interested. You will be interested in practicing meditation. You know, so what I'm saying here is that happiness is presence when we are alive. So happiness is just an absence of, what's it? Happiness is just an absence of the suffering. And that kind of feeling is happiness. And in the Buddhism, we say that every sentient being is looking for happiness. But all the sentient being is not looking for pleasure, I think, or for joy. You know, every sentient being is looking for happiness and searching for happiness. And that is why also we say that every sentient being has a Buddha nature in the Buddhism. And it is something like from our deep heart, we know something. All the sentient beings know something, that happiness is achievable. Happiness is possible. If it is not that, then, you know, we ask ourselves why we like happy. You know, there's no reason. Nobody teaches, even like all the sentient being, like a small insect, like an ant, you know, and the spiders and cockroaches and all this, I think they are searching for happiness. Nobody teaches them to look for happiness and to search for the happiness. And we also, you know, nobody taught us to search for happiness, to become happy person. And we just naturally, you know, comes from our heart, and we like to be happy. And from the Buddhist point of view, we say that it is because from this Buddha nature, that the Buddha nature that we have, that, you know, like from, what's it, from our deep of our heart, that we know something. It is kind of like we forget something. We know something, but we forget. So that is why, you know, it is kind of like from our deep heart, we are looking for the happiness through practicing spirituality. And that is kind of like, you know, to have a goal. But sometimes it is dangerous to have a goal. Then we feel kind of like a desire, or we feel attachment towards the happiness. That is why one interesting thing that I want to share is when Buddha started giving a teaching on Four Noble Truths in Saranath, he didn't use the word happiness at all. Whenever he did give a teaching, he always used the word free from suffering. You know, whenever he used the word, he always says free from suffering. And it says that at the beginning, because Buddha thought that if we use the word happiness, then it will create some kind of attachment in the people's mind. So that is just, I thought about the happiness. So the bottom line that I want to say is that the spirituality should not be cause of our fear and guilt. And how to bring more spirituality into our daily life is also by, you know, what's the developing more interest toward the spiritual practice, and by being more alive, by being like trying to be more alive in our practice, and then that will create more interest toward the spiritual practice. And the spirituality is the development of our inner being. It is not the development of our outer image or outer material or whatever it is. The spirituality always should be the development of our inner being or our inner self by connecting ourselves with our own spirit, by doing meditation or by doing chanting or by doing other kind of spiritual practice. So that is just my brief suggestion and very simple way of explaining what is enlightenment, what is renunciation, and what is love. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.